Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, and welcome back to The Scrum Down with Alex Corbacero. And back in the host chair, Ahmed Farid. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
It's about time you were back, mate. You've been big time in this pod for too long. It's pretty much been on hold just because of your schedule, if I'm honest. But, you know, after our big weekend on NBC and getting some nice promo, you finally decided to come back and join us for the pod. It's great, mate. Welcome back.
They got me going all around the country, Kentucky Derby and Preakness and all, but now back, you're right, back in my rightful home next to Alex Corbacero in Studio 6 in our Stamford, Connecticut studios for an NBC Prime Showcase game, Champions Cup Final. And Alex, we can take him behind the curtain a little bit. Whenever we're on NBC, it's like a little more pressure. There's a little more pressure to perform.
Way more pressure to perform. It's obviously, it's like being back on, for listeners in England, you know, Channel 4 at ITV. For here, Americans obviously know it's broadcast television. It's the bigger windows you're going to get for rugby in America. And, you know, there's just more eyeballs on you. And the windows and stuff, because of, you know, the amount of time you get is always going to be less to talk as well. So it's quite high pressure weekend, but I felt like we delivered pretty good and rose to the challenge.
And these games are going longer, so it squeezes the Corbs chat time even more. But let's get right into it, because it was a good game. And you predicted in the pregame show, which was also a big risk on your part, a big audience, broadcast television, you picked La Rochelle, the Cinderella story, the underdog to win this game. And while they didn't, I think everyone knows that, what they did do is they played really well and they had the lead in the first half, and they did legitimately look pretty good in this game.
I picked La Rochelle, and it was because I watched a longer breakdown on how they play. I went back and watched that Leinster game a little bit again, and I just feel like the control they have on games is the recipe to win big games. Like they've been able to contain teams with defense, kicking game, an unbelievable forwards pack. And I just thought in a final where things are going to tighten up a little bit anyway, I quite like that, especially how efficient and stuff they are off strike plays. But unfortunately, they looked good. They ran Toulouse really close. They just missed some big opportunities, and the red card and being up with 14 men for a lot of it just was too much for them to overcome. But they'll be kicking themselves because they still could have won that game with 14 men.
Yeah, we're going to get into the rest of this game. We're going to talk a little bit about the Premiership, who are in their final three rounds of the regular season before they get into the playoffs. British and Irish Lions, they got some tune-ups coming up. We'll see those games on Peacock. So we're going to talk about that. But let's get through this this final, because you're right. They went down a man early on. Botia sent off with the red card. Did you agree with that call? Did you think that was legit?
I think so. It's so hard. Because say in the MLR right now, they have a rule that I think if you get a red card, after 20 minutes, you can bring someone new on to replace. So you're only down for 20 minutes, where that's something I think is worth considering. Because when you get to a big final and you have 60-odd minutes a man down for a split-second accidental hit, yes, the outcome is very dangerous. But you know that there's no, malice intent. It's not the same as if I, punched someone or lost my temper and then that's why I'm off. So it is a really hard pill to swallow, and it can affect the final. Luckily, we still got a very competitive game. I do think it stunted some of La Rochelle's attack and how they wanted to play, not having their big strike runner at 12. But at the same time, yeah, it's definitely a red card. I thought that there was really lucky that a reciprocal kind of event for Toulouse only ended up, I think, was it a penalty and not a yellow card, where right. It looked very, very similar to me. And that's the difference between a split second of inches and a dips is one's just a penalty and doesn't affect the game, and one's a red card and can almost ruin a game.
Yeah, it was, you're right. We thought it was going to be a yellow card when Toulouse had a similar incident. That was just a penalty, no red, no yellow. Yeah, do you think if Botia doesn't go off there, do you think La Rochelle win that game?
Yeah, 100%. I'm sorry, I do. I just think they managed to defend Toulouse with a man down. Like, if you think about it, an extra number in defense is massive. The launch of first phase that Botia gives him, the big hits. He hadn't been having the best game. I think one of the key areas of the game where I think La Rochelle will kill themselves, will be kicking themselves, is in that first half when they had that sort of 10-minute period camped in the 22, scrum, penalty, decided to scrum again. Botia gets stopped twice with two big turnovers. It's not very flash or deceptive, the carrying and the play they're doing off there. And the fact that he got stripped or turnover was the game to me. But if he's there for the rest of the game, I just feel like that it was such a close game that could have gone either way. I just feel like that probably would have, you know, just given a bit more emphasis behind what La Rochelle were doing in that game.
But he went out, and Toulouse get the victory. It's the record fifth European Cup title, Champions Cup title. So no one has won as many as Toulouse. Hadn't done it for about a decade, but this puts them back on top. I think last year, Alex, we were talking about Exeter and the rise for them, and they won the domestic and European double, and they were high flying, and now they don't even get to the final. And so it is Toulouse. And we saw the all French final here too. Are we seeing a little bit maybe of a changing of the guard? Now, I know France didn't win Six Nations. They probably could have if they didn't have a COVID outbreak on that team. Are we seeing that French rugby really take off and put themselves in a prominent position, you think?
I think so. I think we've been seeing the signs of that for a while. And, you know, Racing have always been up and thereabouts when it comes to these, you know, Champions Cup finals. Toulouse have been a fringe, like, semi-finalist sort of contender for a while, but never quite got there. And then this was finally their chance. And I think with Intermac and DuPont just having, you know, the seasons of their careers, it was inevitable that they are going to be the reckoning force. French rugby is on the rise. This is the icing on the cake, if you didn't realize it. These two teams in the final, plus Montpellier winning the Challenge Cup, plus I completely agree that France would have won the Six Nations had it not been for that COVID outbreak. I just think it was a momentum derailer for them in that tournament. And when you look at how close the results were without the interruption, I think there's a strong argument for that as well. So on a whole, I think this is a sign that French rugby is really moving forward. They finally got like the conveyor belt of producing French players right. It seems like they've sort of broken that old nuance of doing things backwards in the dark ages. And you've got, you know, unbelievable playing squads with bigger salary caps, bigger sort of high name players, and then great coaching, like great coaching. Like La Rochelle are so well coached. Gibbs, the Kiwi, and Ronan O'Gara, the Irishman, that is a really well kitted out outfit that have, they're going to, you know, they could still win the French league. I think that will give them a lot of confidence, you know, being only like just behind Toulouse. I back them in the playoffs against most French sides as well. And I just think maybe if anything, this might have been a year too soon for them, but they're going to keep rising. Toulouse, the ability to sort of not break or fracture when they're under so much pressure in that game was outstanding. You know, you had a half where you didn't even really hear Intermac or DuPont's name. They were just on the receiving end. But, that you know, criticize La Rochelle for not getting the try, commend Toulouse for not conceding. Some big stops in the 22 there that kept them in that game. And then the ability to finally stretch La Rochelle and use the tempo in that second half and to sort of run them off their feet at the end was very, very impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty apparent that these two teams are not that far off talent-wise, at least competition-wise. And one of the craziest stats we said going into the game was that La Rochelle had never won the French domestic league, and Toulouse had won it 20 times. And so they're 1-2 right now, and who knows, perhaps La Rochelle can get the win in the top 14 this year in France. They look pretty good in this Champions Cup final, even though they came up short. Toulouse got the win, and that means an American won the Champions Cup. David Inuu, 21-year-old. We saw him get his medal after the game. What a cool moment for him.
Unbelievable. Like, you know, for there's a few players like that. Titi Lamastatelli, who was at Saracens, picked up a couple as well. But unbelievable achievements for these players to be coming over there, to be so young, to be away from your home, everything you know, to be making a new life in France. He looks like a big part of the squad. Charlie, the big tight head, Sorry, one second. There's just a lot of noise outside. The big head, Charlie Tafuna.
We can't hear Alec. We can't hear it at all.
You can't hear it at all. Sorry.
Your microphone.
There's a gym outside me. I'm in this little sound booth, but there's just weights dropping.
Yeah, so you can't see it. I can see it right now. Alex is in a tiny little sound booth. And you know, Alex is not a tiny man, but they fit him in a tiny little sound booth. And it's the best sounding you've ever been on this podcast. And whatever is happening out there, Alex, is only affecting you. I heard none of it.
I honestly, it feels like Jurassic Park. You know, like when the water glass shakes and you feel like the T-Rex is coming. That's kind of how I feel right now. But yeah, back to Anuhu. You know, being, you know, mentored by an all-black legendary tight head, to be in that squad, to be winning trophies, to coming on and playing, it puts him in great stead. And it really probably puts him in a front-runner candidacy to be involved in those USA tests in July against England and Ireland as well.
He played in the Rugby World Cup as I think he was 19 at the time.
Yeah.
He hurt his ankle early on, and so he didn't get to play very much, but it was cool to see him. Yeah, you mentioned TT, who also won the Champions Cup. Our friend Blaine Scully tweeted that now four Americans have won the Champions Cup. You've named two. Well, I named one. I gave you David. That was a gift. You named TT. Who are the other two?
Dan Lyle.
Dan Lyle, our friend Dan Lyle.
And Chris Wiles.
Wow. Well done. You got all four.
Yep. I was like, I know this question.
Yeah. So they have all four. They're in the same company now as Champions Cup winners. As Americans. So it was Exeter last year, not this year. Exeter find themselves second in the Premiership table with three rounds to go here. They're behind Bristol, and they are 8 points behind Bristol. So it looks like one seed, two seed. That might be locked up here. Sale currently third, Harlequins fourth. And there's a pretty healthy gap between fourth and fifth now. Northampton, they are fifth. They're 11 points back from Harlequins. So we might already have, Alex, as we shift over here to the Premiership, we might already have the top four.
I feel like we do have the top four. You know, which order third and fourth finish is probably the big question, but we're already seeing the formation of the playoffs. And it's going to, like, I think we have four great teams and great matchups in that. And Sale and Harlequins are sides that can put big performances in. Going away to an Exeter or a Bristol is going to be a tough ask. And I think, you know, an Exeter-Bristol fully loaded final to me sounds delicious. Like my mouth is already watering thinking about that game, but you're still going to have a spoiler alert because Harlequin's a game at the moment. We've seen them throw it about. They went to Bristol and just lost. And then Exeter, how can you ever count against a side like that? Yes, they haven't had maybe the consistency and just the utter dominance that we've seen in other years, but they're unbelievable championship caliber side. They're still right up there with the gold standard in the Premiership. And, you know, this short preseason back in with the whole COVID disruption, everything, it wasn't the great prep if you went all the way to have sort of the runway you need to get the most out of your sort of season. And so I feel like there's mitigating factors for Exeter maybe not quite being the just absolute unstoppable force that we've seen. But I am buzzing for these playoffs, and I just think it's going to be really exciting because Sale are a big game team as well. They got a big pack. They got McGinty at 10, who's another American who's playing out of his skin. Who, you know, they are a team that could go beat anyone on the road. So it's same with Harlequins and the way they like to play, and it's exciting. I think we're in a really good place to have, you know, unbelievable playoffs. And if you want me to pick it now, I'm picking Bristol. I just think it's their year. I felt that for a while. I feel like they'll turn it on at the right time. But some people might think I'm dumb, and I bet there's a lot of people thinking Exeter still got this.
So Exeter has given up the fewest points in the league, 308, although Bristol's not far behind. Both have scored just over 500 points, so pretty equal on the stat sheet. So do you think this is you mentioned all the mitigating factors for all the teams, but Exeter played deep into last year, quick turnaround this year, missing some of their guys, Six Nations. Do you think this is a one-year, if Exeter don't win the title, this is a one-year blip, or is Bristol now their upward trajectory better than Exeter's?
I think this is a blip for Exeter. I think they'll bounce back stronger to next year. I just think it's inevitable. The only issue is obviously, I don't even think they have too many players on the Lions. So that was the only thing I was going to say that potentially could impact them. But on a whole, I just feel like a long preseason and a regroup is exactly what this team needs. I do think Bristol are only going to get stronger, though. Like, this is one of the things I love about Bristol is improving week on week. New plays, new trick stuff, new layers to their game. Constantly improving, and they have continuity in their squad to next year. I think both these teams get better, and I think the biggest theme from all of this is the gap is closing. You know, Exeter were above everyone last year, especially after the COVID break and coming back. They just hit the ground absolutely running. Where right now, I'd say the gap is the closest it's been around them and a few of the other top teams in a while.
What happened to Wasps? Eighth right now. They were what? Second last year?
Yeah, I think inconsistencies. Final. Again, another team that, you know, went all the way and then didn't win and had a short preseason to get back into it. Injuries, inconsistencies, and a game plan that is high risk, high reward at times, which can, if you're not quite accurate and have inaccuracies in your game, can really impact you and put you on a losing run. And I think once they sort of fell out of contention, they've just kind of drifted away now. They're still a team that on their day are very hard to beat because they have so many good players, exciting attack. They've just are in nowhere near the consistent sort of performers they need to be in that top four at the moment. And there's probably there's a laundry list of reasons because of that, really. It's not one thing.
Yeah, probably could say a lot of the same things about Bath, who were a lot better last year. They're down there with Wasps. So what about the teams, Alex, 5, 6, and 7? You got Northampton, Leicester, and London Irish. Probably not going to make the top four here. They would need a miracle, but finish better than you thought they would. Of those three teams, which was most impressive to you? Which one had the best year?
I think Saints. I think the turnaround that Northampton Saints from losing, was it like 14 in a row, to now finding their stride again, probably deserved a lot of credit for me. And that's probably my initial response. But now that I'm thinking about the teams, I look at Leicester, the team that had been written off, you know, new coaches, what was going to happen with Borthwick. They're finally starting to show what's brewing at Leicester now. That Champions Challenge Cup final on the Friday night, losing at the depth in a really tough game against a strong Montpellier. It shows that they're starting, like, the foundations of what Borthwick's been building there and everyone else is starting to build into something. And then I probably am being harsh because London Irish deserve a hell of a lot of credit. They were, you know, they were relegation risks. I honestly thought with the break and everything, I knew they had some players to come back, but I just didn't foresee it coming to how they've actually come and become sort of a mid-side table. They've won a lot more games. They're consistent. They have a game plan. They're scoring exciting tries. I think all of those three teams are in like the highly improved this season category. And if they had got their act together a little sooner, wouldn't be an outside chance at the top four. Like, do I think one of those three teams could knock off a Sale, a Harlequins? Absolutely. But I think they just haven't shown the consistency to be in touching distance in the league.
I knew your friends over at London Irish would not stand if you did not talk about them, at least a little bit of those three teams.
But no, they do deserve a lot of props. And that's why I kind of just didn't answer your question. I just shouted out every team in the end.
You did, which was fine. Yeah, London Irish were 10th last year. Leicester were 11th. I mean, they would have been relegated if not for all that happened with Saracens and docked all those points. And so, yeah, pretty good turnaround for both those clubs, and Northampton right on the outside looking in. So it's going to be an interesting final three rounds. And then you got the playoffs of the Premiership. We'll talk about that as we go. Let's touch quickly, Alex, on the British and Irish Lions, because we talked about on a broadcast of all the matches coming up, South Africa, their tour with them. Peacock is your place for that. Peacock will have all the matches, all the three of them as we go through July and into August. They're starting up here, Alex, with a warm-up against Japan at Murrayfield. This was announced June 26th. It's going to be their first warm-up. Going to have like 16,000 fans there at Murrayfield, which, by the way, 10,000 at Twickenham. Never before in the history of sports has so few fans felt like so many.
I know.
It just is so cool to see all that. And to see, we're seeing mouths again, Alex. You know, hopefully more people are getting vaccinated out there. We're getting to see a mouth from fans, which is cool too.
Absolutely. I think, you know, 10,000 fans, how good did it look? Even though they were spread out, just seeing fans across that many seats was awesome. And I think welcome back the UK to that. I think it's fantastic. If we equate that to the British and Irish Lions, why are we doing the tour in South Africa? Like, I know we've gone back and forth, but now that you've got fans in the UK, why are the games not over there? They're going to be at the moment, sorry to to get on a rant, but they're going to be behind doors in South Africa, all the players going over. It just makes no sense. I think they obviously, there was so much uncertainty about when fans were going to be allowed back in the UK that they sort of bottled it trying to move it back there. But now when you look at what's going on, you could probably get by that time half capacity in all those venues. You know, that's a massive amount of revenue, a massive experience for fans to come, a one-off COVID year where the Lions are at home. I'm still really hoping that they decide to change back to the original plan. But Lions on NBC is massive. I don't know about that warm-up game. I didn't see it on the schedule that was released, but I hope that's on Peacock too. It's fantastic that every game is live and on demand on Peacock. I think for American fans, that is an evolution of the sport. Last Lions tour, it was hidden behind on ESPN, the odd game on ESPN2 or on delay or in the middle of the night, where now you've got it all available at the click, every frame of every game, live or on demand, which is fantastic for the sport. And for us, we're most likely going to cover the last test on linear. I think the rest will be on Peacock purely because of the Olympics and the windows that are available. But for the sport, how good is it the Lions are going ahead? And the sort of mystique of what the Springboks are going to look like. We haven't seen them since the World Cup final. And these are going to be the first games they play. Another fantastic story that sort of intertwines with all of this and the Lions.
This is one of, whenever I bring up all your accomplishments, which you make me do, especially when we're on NBC broadcast television, former English star, Premiership champion, Six Nations champion. But you always light up the most when you're like, hey, British and Irish Lions. And I say participant. And, you know, no, we won, mate. We won. That's like one of your, like playing in this. This tournament is one of your favorites.
Absolutely. It's my legacy. It's the most meaningful thing I did in the sport, and it was at the biggest stage. I think for everyone listening, if you don't know exactly what the Lions are, they're kind of like an all-star team. It's the best players from England, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland come together every 4 years in a short period of time to take on, you know, one of the top three of the Southern Hemisphere, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa. It rotates. So for them, it's a big deal because they only get the Lions every 12 years. And for the players on the Lions, most Lions players only play one tour. And it's only the special gifted or the lucky or the fortunate few that get to do multiple tours. So it really is such a like amazing moment of your life. And the fact that we were able to go to Australia and win it, and you know, without taking up too much time on this pod, I played quite an impactful part in that series and helping us win, that it all sort of is the icing on the cake to just making it the pinnacle of my rugby experience. And so I always joke with you, you love to give me the hypes and the intros, Premiership winner, you know, Six Nations winner, depending on the thing we're doing, I have a pretty good, you know, title or a resume that fits with it. But this Lions one for me is particularly special. And the fact that I can say Lions series winner, the last series team to win since 1997, which I was saying to you, is 24 years. And you were like, well, they must really suck. I'm like, no, it's really hard to win a Lions series. They drew the last one in New Zealand, which was pretty special. But, you know, to be the last to win it in 2013 in Australia, something I'm very proud of. And until someone else knocks us off, I'll keep reminding you that only series winners in 24 years.
Yeah, so Alex actively roots against British and Irish Lions every year so that he can continue to say that he was
some
the last
say
one
that,
to win.
Though.
Who was it that I was seeing an interview after a game? They were breaking down, like they were asked about not making the team. Did you see that?
Kyle Sinclair.
Yes.
Tough to watch, mate. He's someone who I'm still shocked hasn't gone. Like when you look at the props, I understand they've gone Tag Furlong, who's probably the starter, and then to me, Kyle Sinclair's the other starter, and you've got Ferguson and Porter who are on the tour, who are going, who are great props. But for me, I can't see an argument to why Kyle Sinclair's, I guess the replacements are good, but I just think he deserves to go. And so to see someone so emotional and raw on camera and show that vulnerability and what it means to them, especially a guy that's a big, tough guy who's dealt with a lot in his life and matured a lot to show that side and to see how much it means to him and see how much he's hurting. Like, you know, the last Lions tour in 2017, he was a bit of a fringe selection. He hadn't quite established himself as the guy, and he got to go. Now he is one of the guys, and he's not going. That's just brutal for him, and I'm gutted. But I didn't make the initial pick. It wasn't easy, and I got the call up because of injury, and I honestly feel like he'll get the same. Such a tough tour to keep all your props fit the whole time. Maybe it will happen, but I feel like there's a strong chance he could come in and the reasons behind him not being selected. I think the other props had good Six Nations. Maybe his Six Nations wasn't quite as up to his normal best, but there were a lot of guys in that category who still went on the tour, and I think you should have picked him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably a lot like Major League Baseball. We have the All-Star game here, and if you're not an All-Star, just wait, because a lot of people here, at least, decline because it's an exhibition. And so maybe he'll end up going, and that would be cool, because, yeah, it really affected him not being selected for that team. It was a little surprising, but it just shows you how much this series means to all these people to be in. So that's coming up this summer. We also have, I'd be remiss not to mention, one of my favorite sports to watch in the Olympics, rugby sevens, coming back. We're going to have that. We're ramping up there. So, Alex, what's on the docket on the lead up to the Olympics, which now are just, you know, a couple months away?
Well, it's exciting times for sevens. With the Olympics around the corner, the men's US teams just played a little over a week ago. They played in the UK. Didn't have the best performance, but didn't have all their best players out there. The women had their last performance in Dubai about a month ago or so, and now they're all gearing up to this big event in LA as their sort of send-off. Dan Lyle, AG, are behind at the LA Sevens there, which I believe is the 24th and 25th of June at Dignity Park. I'm just going to double-check that quickly.
No, I'll check that. I'm going to do your fact-checking, and then you keep talking.
It's the last event that we're going to see the U.S. teams play before the Olympics. It's a send-off event. They would have already selected their sides by then, so you'll just see the sort of the actual Olympic teams running out there and getting the last run out before they, you know, play the tournament of their lives. And I think it's been a tough year. I know firsthand with Abby seeing up close how disrupted the international seven scene has been and the uncertainty around the Olympics. But we look to be, you know, at the end of the light of the tunnel. That tournament is going to go ahead. The men and women's teams, I think the women's teams are looking pretty good, and the men's haven't shown what we've seen from them before, but we haven't seen all their best players. They have some guys that are rushing late from injury. I think they'll still be game and ready to go come the time. And that event in LA that is going to be on Peacock, I think is fantastic, you know, that we get to see them one time before and give them a send-off. And if you're in the California area, do look out for tickets, because there are going to be fans there. It's going to be a great environment. Americans do sevens right. So I'm really amped for it. But New Zealand and Australia just played their men and women's sides on the weekend, and they looked pretty good. So I feel like it's going to be a really tough ask. Whoever gets the medal is going to have earned it, because some of the teams are looking sharp, even without the World Series in the running, which I think is probably going to be the strangest thing. Like, we're going to get to Olympics, and some of these teams we're not going to have seen, and some of them we're only going to see one tournament. And usually we have a, you know, 7, 8, 10 stop series in the run in, so you kind of almost know the way it's going to go. Where this time there's going to be so much unknown that it's going to have to draw eyeballs into it.
Dignity Health Sports Park, slated for June 25th and 26th. Is
25th
that what you said?
And 26th. I said 24th and 25th.
Yeah, so you were off a day.
25th and 26th. Beautiful.
People would have shown up early. There would have been no one there, just them and Dan Lyle hanging out for a day before the tournament started. So that's going to be cool. We were all there last what was it, a year, a year ago now.
Yeah, it was February, I think. It was beginning of Feb.
Right before the whole world changed forever. I remember talking with you. We were all talking about it because, I mean, COVID wasn't unknown at that point. And here we were all in LA with teams that traveled from all around the world, probably in retrospect. May not have been the safest environment for all of us, but it was a really good,
event. Could have been a super spreader event. Who knows at that time? Seems like there was a lot going on with COVID before we even really knew it. And more is coming out that way. So sounds like even more that it was probably everywhere. But yeah, how long ago does that feel? Like, how surreal is it that we had that event and then the world literally shut down? We had everyone from the world in one place, and then it was off limits and taboo. And now we're finally in a position again. We get to have that. It's exciting. It's not going to be as many teams this time. I think there's fewer teams, which obviously is unfortunate. But at the same time, we're going to see international sevens back, and I'm just buzzing for it. I know how much it means to Abby and the girls for America to get to play on the home soil before they go, and I know it's going to mean the same to the men's. And they'll look to put on a good show, get the fans behind them, get some momentum, and then roll in and try and go get some medals.
I cannot wait to see that. The Olympics coming up, and hopefully they happen. Of course, there's always going to be rumblings, and yeah, I think there's some outbreaks in Tokyo and Japan right now. So fingers crossed. I think, you know, an Olympics is exactly what this world needs right now. We all come together. Sport brings people together. The Olympics could do that. So hopefully they can do it safely out there.
Yeah.
Get this LA tournament in before then, and I'll celebrate for the Summer Games a year later. So final minute here, Alex. We got to get an update on the Giltinis.
The Giltinis,
your team,
you
your guys, how are they? How are they doing?
We're good. 8-1 in the MLR, which is top.
Oh, you lost? Wait, yeah, you lost?
We lost one game in New York away a few weeks ago. It was tough, gritty game from Rooney, and they just edged us out. We were missing a couple of players, windy, tough conditions, and they played a very good game plan that sort of, you know, stopped us getting out the blocks, and they got that W on us. But I do feel the team's grown and shown a lot of improvements. And then
did you put that, like, as a good coach would do, did you put that loss on you? Did you take full responsibility?
I don't take full responsibility for the whole loss, but I definitely take responsibility for my areas of the scrum which underperformed in that game, and it was a learning curve for us. And, you know, without getting into the nitty gritty of it, it was, you know, we got out sort of street smart, and that's something that maybe I own up and say maybe I should prepare them for more of the, like, the trickery that might have been thrown at them. I think if it was a fair contest, we probably would have been all right, but the way it went down, we had some learning to do, and I feel like we've grown from there, and it's only going to make us stronger now. 8-1 pretty much almost solidified a playoff spot in our conference, and that gives us some flexibility to rotate guys, hopefully, and have a good run in until the end of the season.
British and Irish Lions series winner, Premiership champion, Six Nations champion, former English star, and Coach Corbs.
Exactly.
Got to add Coach Corbs at the end of it now.
Hopefully MLR winning coach one day. We'll see how it goes.
MLR, yeah, we'll see.
But no, quickly before the show ends,
couple
quick fire things. Charlie Falmaina is the name I wanted to say earlier when we were talking about Anuhu. He's the All Black tight head at Toulouse who mentors Anuhu. Fantastic environment for him to be in. And then lastly, the thing I wanted to actually bring up was one rant about the Champions Cup was the reffing. And I know Luke Pearce, we talked about this a little bit. A lot of people saying he reffed a great game. And I do think he did ref, like, he got all his calls right. And so is that a good game? But the thing I wanted to bring up is, mate, that game was so stop-start. It was so whistle-heavy. And it went on so long that it ate, you know, personally for us, it ate a lot of our time on NBC. We actually had to go long. Mm-hmm. Man, we couldn't talk much. But just for the viewers as well, do we need that much whistle in rugby? Is that a good thing? Or should we let it play a bit more? Had it been a French ref, probably would have flowed a bit more. Toulouse might have won more, easier, like, because it was a bit more open. The stop-start, I think, suited La Rochelle, and it helped them with a player down to be able to be in that stop-start game. But, you know, in the MLR, it's not perfect. It's actually pretty rogue. But they have no TMO, and the game just flows. And it's faster. Yeah. It's more enjoyable. You know, it doesn't go on for as long. I feel like there's got to be some sort of balance at the top level where we review the tries and the detail. But some of the foul play and that stuff's got to happen elsewhere, or maybe just done afterwards on report or something, because we're losing the flow of the game. Part of the thing that teams pride themselves on is, like, conditioning and pushing teams and, you know, exhausting your opposition. And when you have that much whistle, it's very hard to do. Rant over. I just wanted to get that before we left.
I think that's a good point, because you see it in a lot of other sports too that are dealing with replay and VAR, and soccer has really not gone off like I think they wanted, and the fans certainly don't like it either, because, yeah, you have these long stoppages in play, and it's hard, because that's one of the things I like about rugby, is that you explain it, you understand it. People who are watching can hear the decision-making process. I love that part of it, but there's just too much of it.
Yeah.
You gotta condense it down into about half the time. And Luke Pearce seems to enjoy those times of explaining the rules.
Agreed.
It goes on maybe a little long.
Agreed. And I think, what was that game? Was it the semifinal or something? We were praising him and Wayne Barnes, and then
the beginning of it, and then by the end of it, we're like, okay, we get it.
It's just too much. Like, I understand, like, I guess they're judged on getting all the calls right, and that's what they want to do. They don't want to get a call wrong. So that's why they are, you know, to the letter of the law and the detail, taking the time to focus on every call. So there's no criticism against them getting a call wrong. But should it be about that? Like, is rugby about that the reffing is bang on, or is it about the flow and the excitement of the game and the product 100%. We're creating? That is the question that needs to be debated. I think you could do a whole nother pod on it, but I feel like we've just sort of cracked that can of worms open a bit. And, you know, especially for people listening to this in the UK that probably don't hear a lot of these arguments, most people mm-hmm. are very praising of that. Think mm-hmm. about it. Do you think it's good to stop start? Like, it promotes teams can have massive teams, like massive players that, you know, just smash each other if there's no real fitness element to the game because the game doesn't flow as much. So just think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. You have to keep it in balance, right? There always has to be this balance. You can never have too much of one, not enough of another. It's like, we like the explanations, but I agree with you. I think there's a good point to be made there of keeping the game going, keeping it flowing, because it does. It changes the nature of the game if you can rest for that long of a time.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, now Alex, we're actually done.
Now we're done. That's good. Rant over. Well done, Alex. Hey, good to be back with you on NBC, back on the Scrum Down. I'm doing the Belmont coming up here. No Triple Crown possibilities in horse racing. The same horse did not win the Kentucky Derby as the Preakness, but still going to be a good time in New York. So that's next on the docket for me. But I think I also do have a rugby from home this weekend. So I think we are back together.
Yeah,
Alex,
we're back with Premiership this weekend.
Okay, good. Let's do that then.
Stay tuned to my channels and I'll get the schedule out of the exact timings and everything. And a reminder to everyone listening that every game of Premiership rugby that's left and the Lions that are coming is available live and demand on Peacock TV. So make sure you subscribe to that, because for rugby fans in America, $4.99 a month, it's an absolute bargain on what you get just for the rugby. But then I also smash all, like, Harry Potter's back on there. Yep. Loads of seasons are on there. Some of the Olympic documentaries are cool. The Jordan Burroughs one, All I See Is Gold or whatever, is fantastic as well. I watched even the Ryan Lockley documentary with Abby on there too. That was pretty interesting as well. Yeah, so there's actually quite a lot on Peacock. So for everyone listening in the US, please check that out as well.
Yeah, it's the best deal in streaming right now. It won't stay that way forever, but right now it is the best deal in streaming. You can get all the content, all the Premier League games too. Which just concluded their season, but that's such a long season. They'll start up again here soon for very cheap. All right, for Coach Corbs, I am back as host, Ahmed Farid. And that is the latest edition of The Scrum Down.